This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next half hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Chuck Baldwin, who's the Constitution Party candidate for the President of the United States. Chuck, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Letting me come on your show.
Well, certainly you're not getting any mention from the major media at all. They keep talking about Bob Barr, but what have they ever mentioned the Constitution Party?
Well, I believe they will before it's all over with. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised to hear that Dick Morris brought up my name on the Bill O'Reilly show the other night, and he didn't even mention Bob Barr. He said that Ralph Nader may be a challenge to Barack Obama, and he said that Chuck Baldwin may be a challenge to John McCain, and he didn't even mention Bob Barr at all. So, you know, I think as we go through this campaign, I think we're going to have a campaign, Dr. Stan, that the big TV talk shows are going to have to pay attention to.
All right, fine. Well, let's talk about what you think that the major issues are facing America today and what you would do about them if you were the president.
Well, first of all, I think the issue confronting us as far as our national security and sovereignty is concerned is no doubt the immigration issue, the illegal immigration issue. I think that issue is one that if we don't address it in 2008, it'll be too late. And unfortunately, the two major party candidates, Barack Obama and John McCain, had no intention whatsoever of securing our borders. And the only candidate for president in 2008 that has the determination to do that is Chuck Baldwin. And, Dr. Stan, as you know, that within 30 days after I'm sworn in as president, I would have those borders secure. I just came from the border, by the way. I was out in California and in Utah for a two-week tour. We had a tremendous time out there. The crowds were good. The press was fair. The local media gave us great attention. We're all over the place on the media out there. I had a VIP tour of the border crossing there just south of San Diego, and then I went out to the real border, you know, the desert area of California, and saw the open border, and realized that it's really worse than I thought it was. And if we don't get a handle on the illegal immigration situation, I think our country is toast as far as our security and sovereignty are concerned.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and of course there are those who would want America to be toast, whose dedication is not to the sovereignty of the United States, but to merging us with Mexico and Canada, and really, of course, merging with the rest of the world. What about the fence now? The government was going to build a 700-mile fence. They promised to build us a fence, or a virtual fence, or an invisible fence, or something or other. What's really happening with that fence that, according to law, they're supposed to build?
Yeah, well, not much is happening. That's for sure, and I saw a fence, all right, and it was a fence that was big enough you could drive a truck through. There wasn't any fence to speak of, and the fact of the matter is, you and I both know you don't have to have a fence to secure that border. I could have it secured in 30 days. You know, we're sending National Guard troops to Iraq to guard the borders of Iraq, and we're leaving our own borders unprotected. That's ridiculous. When I was out there, I was shocked to learn that our Border Patrol people do not even have night vision equipment. Can you imagine that? They don't even have GPS equipment. Here they are. They're outstaffed, outgunned, outmanned, out-equipped. They're facing a very violent enemy on the other side of the border, drug dealers, people with fully automatic machine guns coming across almost at will, and these few fellows out there are trying to protect our borders. You know, I came away, Dr. Stan, with a real appreciation for what they're trying to do.
Hold that thought. Chuck will be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, you go right ahead. You said you came back with real appreciation of what these people, the border guards, are trying to do. Go ahead.
Yeah, they really are. They, you know, these are just patriotic fellows that are out there trying to protect our borders for us, and they're working hard, and they're working in adverse conditions. They don't have the proper equipment that they need. They don't have night vision equipment. They don't have GPS equipment. Can you imagine our government not giving these brave men and women the tools they need to protect us? But there they are on the border day and night trying to secure our borders. And it's just a matter that the administration and the powers that be in Washington, D.C. do not want to secure the borders. That's the only way you can look at it. If they wanted to secure the borders, they would do it. The other thing I would do outside of putting the personnel that we need on the border, I would go after the employers who are knowingly hiring illegal aliens. I would prosecute them under the fullest extent of the law, and I would send a very clear and stern message to the American people and to those that would not consider being illegals that it's not going to continue. We are going to secure our borders.
All right, fine. And I think that it's important that people understand that there are those who want a multilingual, a multicultural society. There's no better way to destroy a nation than what they're doing today. Would you agree with that, Chuck?
Well, you look out there at California right now, and Los Angeles, where I spent several days in L.A. and San Diego and that whole Southern California region, Dr. Stan, and in some parts of that area, it's a war zone. The Mexican gangs are coming across in force. I met a real precious black couple, man and woman, that is raising a fine family. They had a 17-year-old son that was an honor student. He was a scholar. He was going to go to college on a scholarship. He was a star athlete, a model student, a model citizen. He was standing in his front yard, and a Mexican illegal alien gangbanger came up out of nowhere and just shot him in the stomach. He fell down on the ground, and after he was on the ground, the illegal alien put the gun to his head and blew his brains out right there in his front yard. This was a man that had been released from jail. He had been arrested for assaulting a police officer. Again, an illegal alien, Mexican gang member, MS-13, out of jail on parole for assaulting a police officer. And while he's out on parole, he kills this black kid and for no reason whatsoever. And some of these, the violence that is going on in that part of the world is just unthinkable, and it's directly related to the our government's position allowing illegal immigration to continue unabated.
Why didn't they send this man back to Mexico when they released him from jail?
Absolutely.
I will be back in just a moment with Chuck Baldwin. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chuck Baldwin, who's the Constitution Party candidate for the presidency. He was just telling about his black athlete, very young man, capable, excellent student who is standing in the front yard of his home, and a Mexican boy, a young man, that's just out of prison for assaulting a police officer here illegally, is released after assaulting a police officer. Rather, he's not sent back to Mexico. He's released into our community, knowing full well that he's illegal. He just walks up in the yard and kills this young boy. First shoots him in the stomach, then shoots him in the head. And of course, the family is grieving, but where is the outcry? Why aren't we hearing stories like that on our television night after night instead of Britney Spears or Paris Hilton? And they don't talk about this sort of thing. After all, if you're against illegal immigration, you must be a racist. Have you been called a racist, Chuck, for what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, not directly, but there's been the insinuations, of course. Then when that happens, I just politely tell them that my chief of staff here in Pensacola, Florida, is a legal immigrant, a naturalized citizen from Zimbabwe, Africa. He came through the front door. He crossed the T and dotted the I and went through all of the loopholes that you have to do to come into this country legally. It took him about 5.5 years to do it, but he did it. And just a few months ago, he was sworn in as a naturalized citizen of our country. He's my chief of staff, my dear friend. You know, we bring in more legal immigrants into America every year than the rest of the world combined. Over a million people legally migrate into America. So we're not against immigration. We're not against bringing people into our country that want to come in honestly. But this illegal immigration situation is going to destroy our security and our national sovereignty if we don't put a stop to it right now. And as president, that's exactly what I would do, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, what about what's going on over in Iraq? Of course, it appears that the Iraqi government wants us to leave, but we say we don't know what to set up a timetable to pull our troops out, because that would help al-Qaeda and would help the terrorists if they knew when we were going to leave.
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't seems that the Iraqi people over there, the Iraqi government that we put in place, they don't want us there. They feel we're an army of occupation, but we say, no, we're here to help you, and we're not going to sign any sort of an agreement, you know, because after all, that would what would help the terrorists.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we are. We are an occupation force. We were sent in sensibly to be a liberation force. Well, we did liberate the people of Iraq from the regime of Saddam Hussein, but after that, we stayed as occupiers, and that's exactly how we are perceived. And my position is that the longer we stay there, the more or the stronger our enemy becomes, and the weaker we become. I think that keeping that amount of troops in that sandbox in Iraq, not allowing them the maneuverability that they need to be able to defend our country against an aggressive adversary, say somewhere else in the world, I think is very foolish. Our troops are at risk the longer they stay there. Our country is at risk the longer they stay there. And as president, I would demand that our military leaders come up with a expeditious plan to bring our people home, including our civilian personnel that are over there.
Well, of course, Obama, I should say, says he's going to has a plan to bring the troops home in 16 months. Do you think that take us 16 months to get our troops out of there?
I don't know how long it would take, Dr. Stan, sitting here in Pensacola, Florida tonight, not having the advantage of talking to the military commanders on the ground, et cetera. I don't know how long it would take. I'd really hesitate to say a timetable, but I do know that you have to have an exit strategy. And obviously that hasn't been the case. President Bush took those troops into that country without an exit strategy. And I think today he still doesn't have an exit strategy. And what I'm saying is, as the president and the commander-in-chief, I would demand that we have an exit strategy, and then we execute that strategy.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about the fact that Afghanistan's going from bad to worse. The situation up there, we lost more men in Afghanistan last month than we lost in Iraq. And, of course, it seems that the Taliban and the al-Qaeda forces up there and in Afghanistan are getting stronger and stronger. So, but after all, they say, you know, if we just pull out, it's going to be a sign of weakness. It'll help al-Qaeda, you know, it'll just show that we're really weak and we won't see the show this through. How would you approach Afghanistan? Is that different than Iraq?
Yeah, I think it is different than Iraq, but I'll tell you what I would have done and the way I would handle it as president. You know, Ron Paul had the right solution to this, Dr. Stan. I know you know this. Back in 2001, shortly after the attacks on September 11, Dr. Paul introduced his 2001 act of mark and reprisal, which had the president and Congress followed, we would not be bogged down in Iraq. In this non-ending conflict where there's no exit strategy and our troops are becoming extremely vulnerable as well as our country. Instead, we would have been able to take those private forces and whatever military forces were needed, as did Thomas Jefferson whenever our ships at sea were attacked by the Barbary Pirates under his administration, and be able to aggressively seek out those individual private entities such as al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. There's no question in my mind that had we done that, Osama bin Laden would have been killed or captured, and most of his network would have been killed or captured, and we would not be bogged down in Iraq today. And if, as president, that's how I would handle these private terrorist organizations such as al-Qaeda.
Well, now, of course, what are you suggesting? Is this idea of mark and reprisal, it's sort of a private organization carrying this out?
It could be, or it also could be special operations troops from our country, or a combination thereof. The Mark and Reprisal Act would allow the president to insert whatever troops were necessary in order to track down and locate those private individuals and bring them to justice without having to invade a country, occupy a country, and so forth. You know, we should not ever do that without a declaration of war from Congress. Every time we've done this, Dr. Stan, every time we have invaded and attacked countries without a declaration of war, it's always turned out badly. When we ignore the Constitution, it never goes right. When we obey the Constitution, things go right. And that's the promise that I make when I'm sworn in, is to obey the Constitution, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And that's exactly what I would do if I were president.
All right. Well, now, of course, we're having real financial problems. We're having, certainly, the economy seems to be grinding down. The housing market is collapsing. The financial markets are collapsing. Many of our banks are insolvent. What can the federal government do to help the banking industry, to help the construction industry, to get the economy moving again?
Yeah. First of all, I think what most of the problem that we're having today is created by the federal government. I think that they have interjected these grandiose ideas that have done nothing more than destroy the economy of our country. Let me explain. First of all, you know, we've traded our sound money currency for this fiat money in the Federal Reserve System, and we've taxed the American people, you know, half to death with the IRS and the income tax. You know, we've through NAFTA and CAFTA and these other trade deals, we've taken our jobs out of America and taken them to China and India and Mexico. And I was just up in Michigan just a few weeks ago. I used to work up there at the assembly plant, at Plant 5, General Motors Truck and Coach, from 71 to 73. And when I was there, they were working 24/7, three shifts a day, putting out, you know, these trucks. And the economy was great, and the unemployment was almost non-existent. The economy of the community was vibrant. I go back 35 years later, and it's unbelievable what that state has endured. I mean, the factory I used to work at doesn't even exist anymore. It's torn down. The people that used to work there are gone, or they're working three or four jobs to try to make ends meet. The economy is abysmal in the state of Michigan right now. And it's directly related to these so-called free trade deals like NAFTA and GATT, WTO and FTAA, and John McCain's down there in Colombia this week trying to negotiate free trade deals with Colombia. He's not even president yet. I mean, it's just nuts. And the fact of the matter is that we have created this vacuum of sound currency and sound economy that is creating all of this. And the only way to fix it is that we've got to go back to the principles upon which the country was founded economically. We've got to reduce the spending of the federal government. The Democrats want to tax and spend, and the Republicans want to borrow and spend, but they both want to spend. And I want to slash the spending of the federal government. I want to get rid of the income tax. I want to get rid of the IRS. And I want to bring back sound money policy. You know, I fantasized, Dr. Stan, about this the day that I would appoint Ron Paul as the Secretary of the Treasury for the United States and set this economic situation aright.
All right. Well, I certainly believe we've got terrible, terrible financial problems, and I don't think there's any problem facing America today that a new government program won't make worse. But one of the biggest problems we have is we have a fiat money system, and Ron Paul is just pointing out that in the last 3 years, the federal government has created, you know, $4 trillion of money in credit. Isn't that highly inflationary? Is that why the price of everything is going up? They tell us that we have inflation because the prices are going up, but are the prices going up really because of the massive increase of the monetary base?
No question about it. I don't think there's any question about it. And add to that, in the food sector, for example, you know, we got this brilliant idea to try to turn corn into fuel. Well, what does that do to the food supply? That just shrinks the food supply and prices go up again. Everything they do is just the opposite of what should be done. And as a result, you know, we are reeling as an economy. But I think all this is in somewhat fabricated. Don't you, Dr. Stan? I think they're trying to get us ready for the North American Union and the Amero and everything that they did over in Europe. They want to do that here.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there are traitors in Washington, D.C., who have no loyalty to the United States. Their loyalty is this globalist dream, and I think that We've got a Republican candidate, McCain, and a Democrat candidate, Obama. They both feel exactly the same. And it's so refreshing to know at least we have a you who opposes this move towards globalization. Because you can't have globalization and maintain our sovereignty, can you?
No, that's right. Either one will triumph over the other because they cannot peacefully coexist. And that's why I want to preserve our sovereignty, our independence.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Chuck. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but the computer takes over.
No problem. I understand how your show works, Dr. Stan. Yeah, I just think that as President of the United States, my responsibility is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And under God, it is the Constitution that protects our liberties and our freedoms. We would not have them without our constitutional form of government. If we don't have an independent nation, we don't have a free nation. And when we allow these international entities, whether it's the North American Union or Community or the European Union or any other facsimile thereof, to come in and to take over our economic trade laws and so forth, then you have to have a governmental structure in place in order to regulate those policies, and that requires the subservience of the individual states to the collective good of the international body, and that's exactly what's happening today. And John McCain is all for it, and Barack Obama is all for it. They're not going to do anything to slow it down, much less stop it. But I'm telling you, Dr. Stan, when I'm sworn in as president, the New World Order comes crashing down.
Well, certainly there are many, many people, I'm sure, who would agree with you that the New World Order is the pathway to the destruction of the sovereignty of our country. Well, how do you feel about certainly the global warming issue, which is a major issue? Certainly there is tremendous pressure being brought to bear, both from the Republicans and the Democrats, to solve this problem before, of course, global warming destroys the planet. And we're told that if we don't do something, why, of course, the sea levels are going to rise. Of course, it's going to change the environment totally. There certainly is going to be an ability to continue functioning as we have in the past, that rising heat will certainly destroy our crops. It will destroy our forests. What are we going to do to stop global warming?
Yeah, I don't subscribe to Al Gore's theory at all, Dr. Stan, as you can probably imagine. I really think the science on this is bogus. I remember just a few weeks ago, the founder of the Weather Channel actually came out and said it was his opinion that the global warming facade was just that. And I think this is cyclical. In fact, there's some evidence that would indicate that we're already into a global cooling period in the natural world now. So, no, I think this is a vehicle or a tool that the left uses to try to coerce private industry and so forth to succumb to more and more government regulation, which squeezes our business and squeezes our private enterprise, squeezes populations and almost turns into population control and things of that nature, all in the name of you know, protecting the environment. No, I really don't subscribe to that.
I wouldn't think that you would. Well,
yeah.
we have a very real problem that's very close to my heart, and that is a health care crisis. Health care costs are just completely out of bounds, you know. They used to be able to get I can remember when my mother got a private room at the Merritt Hospital for $13 a day, but in 1960 you could get a private room at a hospital, you know, for $50 a day and you know, be out of the hospital in a week with a bill maybe of, $1,300, but now you go into, well, I've been in the hospital, for maybe 12, 14 hours, don't even get a meal, and the bill is $16,000. This is unbelievable.
What don't even get a meal, huh?
What in heaven's name are we going to do about the health care crisis? Because health care is in crisis today. In fact, you go into a waiting room, you may have to wait, hospital waiting room, you may have to wait 10 hours before you see a doctor. We'll be right back there. Well, I'm just asking Dr. Baldwin, what are we going to do about the health care crisis, which is a very real crisis? And you go in to a hospital waiting room anywhere in America almost today, and if you go into that waiting room, you may have to wait an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 or 5 hours before you'll actually see a doctor.
Yeah. So, Well, you're a physician, and so you understand that better than most of us. You can't, everything that government does, it just makes it worse. When you get government involved in medicine and healthcare, you don't solve the problem, you just exacerbate the problem, and that's what's happening here. I think you could probably explain that better than I could. it's amazing to me how that these people think that the way to solve any problem is to get the government involved. And the truth of the matter is, the way to, you know, make the problem worse is to get the government involved. And what we have to do is in across the board, we've got to return to the principles of the free enterprise system. We've got to get the government out of it as much as we can to allow the free enterprise system to work. And when we do that, there's still problems, but not to the degree that we have today. And I got to tell you that I think that this Barack Obama and to some degree John McCain, you know, talking about socialized medicine and sometimes even universal health care, and all we got to do is look to some of the other European nations and across the border to our north and look at what's happened every time they've tried to put universal health care practices in place, and you think we've got problems now, just wait till we have universal health care.
And the old adage, you think medicine is expensive now, wait till it gets free. And I think that's absolutely true. And I agree with you. There's no problem facing medicine today that a new government program won't make worse. Well, the same thing probably is true with federal control of education. We have this No Child Left Behind policy, a policy, of course, which was Ted Kennedy's goal and objective. He never could get that through, so George Bush very kindly got that program through. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the federal control of education? Yeah. What are we going to do? Because our children, when they graduate from high school and are tested competitively with children from other countries, they can't compete. No. How are we going to get American children competitive so they're going to be able to have the opportunity for a good life in the years that lie ahead?
Yep. Again, the answer is the same. We've got to get the government out of it, federal government out of it. You know, that No Child Left Behind Act that you talk about a monstrosity. You remember back in 1994 when Newt Gingrich promised with his contract with America that if they were elected, the Republicans, they would eliminate five federal departments, and one of them was the Department of Education. Well, they were elected to the House and the Senate in 1994, but instead of eliminating those five departments, they actually funded them to a higher degree than they had before. And ever since George Bush took office, you got to go back to Lyndon Johnson to match the kind of spending domestically that's taken place under his administrations. But I would do what Newt Gingrich said he would do but didn't do, and that is I would cut the size and scope of the federal government. I would cut the Department of Education completely out. The 10th Amendment is very clear that anything that's not specifically enumerated in the Constitution to the federal government is reserved for the states and the people respectively. And you will not find education as being a part of the federal government's responsibility anywhere in the Constitution. That means it's the job of the states and the local communities, and that's where I would put it.
How do you feel about gun control laws? And certainly, how do you feel about the recent Supreme Court decision, which, for all intents and purposes, certainly undercut the Washington, D.C. gun ban legislation?
Yeah, I applaud it in principle. I haven't read the details of the bill, and you know, devil's in the details. I'm cautious about some of these, quote, reasonable restrictions language that may be in the bill, but on the face of it, I applaud it because it did. Now we have an absolute definitive ruling from the court that the Second Amendment is a private, personal, individual right. It's not a collective right. And that was a major ruling. And, of course, you know me, I support the right to keep and bear arms. I'm a life member of the Gun Owners of America, and I support the Second Amendment with every fiber of my being. I'll be the best friend in the White House that gun owners and lawful gun dealers ever had.
Well, we're running out of time, and I know you can only stay with me 30 minutes. I want you to get out your website. I want you to get out your telephone number. People would like to get in touch with you and the Constitution Party.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Yes, that website is Baldwin08.com. That's Baldwin08.com. And we need people's help in this campaign. We're getting started, and anything people can do to help us, we appreciate it. There's a toll-free number they can call, and that's 800-USA-1000. 888-888-9811. That's 800, excuse me, it's 888. I misspoke. It's 888-USA-1911. Baldwin08.com.
All right. God bless you, Chuck. Well, thanks for everything you do, and I look forward to having you on our program. If anything comes up you'd like to talk about, give us a call. Always a pleasure.
Wow. Thank you very much, and Dr. Stan. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And certainly our telephone number, we're going to have open lines the rest of the hour, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest will only stay with us for 30 minutes, Chuck Baldwin, an old friend, and he's running for the presidency on the Constitution Party ticket. And isn't it interesting that none of the major television media that I've seen has been covering this at all? They go right along mentioning Bob Barr, but they haven't mentioned the Constitution Party, because the Constitution Party stands solidly behind the federal Constitution, and that is, of course, what the people, the elite who really run our country from behind the scenes, hate. They hate the idea that the Constitution limits the power of the government over the lives of the people and allows them to be free. In fact, our founding fathers, when they created this country, acknowledged that liberty and limited government were synonymous, that our rights came from God, and that to secure those rights, governments were instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. And those God-given rights given to us by our Creator, not by government, but by our Creator, were the very essence of American freedom. And unfortunately, isn't it interesting that today they don't teach this in school? Certainly, they teach our children that we're a democracy. You go back and you read what our founding fathers said about democracy. If you read the 10th of the Federalist Papers, they at least have not been able to destroy this. You can get the Federalist Papers and read the 10th of the Federalist Papers, written by Madison, who said, "Democracies have e'er been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been incompatible with the rights of personal property and personal security, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. Democracies are e'er incompatible with personal liberty and security, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths." Do you notice how violence is picking up in our society today? America is a nation on the way down. Why? Because we've abandoned the concept of our founding fathers, who gave us not a democratic republic or republic democracy. They gave us a republic, and of course we were not to be democratic at all, and the people were not to control the federal government, because they, as had happened in every other society, the power of the people would vote themselves into slavery, because government would promise to give them things, and people always vote for the politicians who promises to give them things. That's why the power of the federal government was to be limited, why we were not to have an income tax, so the politicians couldn't take money from one group and give it to another and eventually enslave everyone. We're losing America because we've forgotten the Constitution, and that is, of course, why they hate the Constitution. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, because we're going to have open lines this next half hour. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we'd love to hear what you have on your mind. You can talk about whatever you want to. But I think that, of course, we have to recognize the fact that America is in real trouble today. We're in real trouble today because we're in a nation in moral decline. We have actually 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease, and probably millions of others with other types of viral diseases, all sexually transmitted. And, of course, we're doing exactly what the Corinthians did. We're doing what the people of Sodom and Gomorrah did. We're doing what the people did at the time of the Noahic flood, you know, because the world was totally corrupt at that time, and God intervened and created a great flood that destroyed the world. And, you know, in Noah's time, and then, of course, God intervened with Sodom and Gomorrah. And do you really believe that God is going to not going to intervene in what's going on in America today? If you really study, I remember when we were going to a meeting in New Orleans, and of course we were flying back there, I think, on Friday. But 2 days before that, there was to be a massive homosexual parade through the streets of New Orleans, and just the day before that parade was to come about, why, there was a hurricane called Katrina that, of course, just flooded the whole of the city. I guess maybe probably on Monday it occurred, and needless to say, why, of course, they canceled the gay parade. Here in America, in California, where I live, of course, they legalized gay marriages, and just within a few days after this went into effect, we suddenly saw the beginning of wildfires. 300 wildfires. We never had 300 wildfires burning one time in the state of California. Then 500 wildfires. Then 1,000 wildfires. Then 1,400 wildfires. And the figure actually reached 1,700 wildfires here in the state of California. Do you think God might be trying to get our attention? Do you believe that God can intervene in the affairs of men? Oh, then what about the massive floods in the Midwest that are simply drowning our crops, our soybean crops, our corn crops back there? Could God be really letting us know of his displeasure? Well, certainly most people don't believe that, but I do believe that God interferes in the intervenes in the affairs of men, because I look back through my life through the years, and God has certainly time and again intervened to keep me out of trouble and keep me from getting into worse trouble than I would have gotten myself into. Well, if you have a question or comment, you agree or disagree, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'd love to talk to you and get your ideas on what's going on today. Now, of course, if you look and see what's happening economically to our country, why, of course, it seems that everything's getting worse and worse and worse. At one time, I think it was old Charlie, I forgot the last name, that he was the CEO of General Motors, who made the remark that whatever is good for General Motors is good for America. Well, right now, of course, General Motors stock is the lowest it's been in almost 50 years. In fact, there are many people talking about General Motors actually going bankrupt. General Motors is losing money on every car they produce at the present time, or just about every car and truck that they produce. And it's the only way they can sell their products. And, I mean, the prices of certainly of cars and of trucks and SUVs has fallen and fallen dramatically. Are you concerned about what's happening to our automotive industry? Certainly, Ford made a small profit last year, but it faces very, very similar problems to General Motors this year. Chrysler is shutting down a number of production lines. Even Toyota, which, of course, had done fabulously well in the United States, is beginning to cut back on its production here in the United States. In the past, we've made up to actually manufactured up to 18 million cars a year. This year, they're talking about maybe 13 to 14 million cars, a dramatic cutback on the number of new cars being produced. Why? Because people are wary about buying them. So many of the people who bought their cars on credit are really just walking away, turning the cars in. The lots are full of almost new SUVs and trucks. And, of course, people can't afford the larger cars because of the rising price of gasoline, which is going to impact on every aspect of our lives. Now, is the price of oil going to keep going up? It may have fluctuations. I think it may go up or down. We even may have a temporary down period, but overall they're going to keep raising the price of oil. Why? Because they've created artificial shortages. That's why there's lots of oil in the world. And we have the largest deposits of oil anywhere in the world, right here in the United States. In fact, you can check what I'm saying. Go up on the Internet and type in Governor Montana 40 billion barrels oil. Governor Montana, 40 billion barrels oil. And they'll tell you about the Bakken oil deposits up there in Montana. And, of course, it was estimated 40 billion barrels of oil there. There was a gentleman, and I think his name was Price. He was a doctor. He worked for the U.S. Geological Survey. And he was preparing a report on the Bakken oil reserve. I think it was about the year 2000, just about ready to release the report. And you'd never guess what happened to Dr. Price. why he died. Just dropped over dead, and the report was never completed. And now, of course, the rest of people there at the U.S. Geological Service say, oh, well, there's only maybe 4 billion barrels of oil there and never be able to get it out. And the governor of Montana keeps telling, we got 40 billion barrels of oil up here. We got 40 billion barrels. I mean, far more than they have in Saudi Arabia. I think they only got 26, 27 billion barrels and all of that. And the areas in Montana are hardly tapped. And then, of course, you get up into Alaska to Anwar, the Arctic Natural Wildlife Reserve. And then, of course, the story of Gull Island. I'm sure most of our listeners don't know that story of the massive oil deposits up off of the north slope of Alaska. And I personally talked to one of the British Petroleum executives, used to work for ARCO, but ARCO was purchased by British Petroleum, and he told me personally that there's massive oil deposits up off the north slope of Alaska, and he's never known why the government has steadfastly refused to allow those to be drilled, and why the oil companies have insisted on it, and why they're keeping it a secret. Well, I know why they're doing it. Because they want to create the crisis that's upon us right today. They want to convince you of peak oil. We're running out of oil. And of course, we're running out of oil because there's no new dinosaurs dying. And all this oil we have comes from dead dinosaurs or something equally ridiculous. And of course, they don't want you to know that oil is a renewable resource. It comes from methane from the center of the earth. And of course, it is then the methane, of course, is ingested by bacterium, which gives oil its carbohydrate base. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like to know more about the idea that oil is a renewable resource, let me suggest the book written by Thomas Gould. G-O-U-L-D was an astrophysicist, and I think he was from Princeton, but he was fascinated by the fact that many of our stars, I should say many of the planets in our solar system and in other solar systems, have an atmosphere that is primarily one of methane. And he feels that there's methane at the very center of the Earth, and that is the source of the renewable oil deposits. And yes, oil deposits are renewable. You can drain a field and they come right back again. Well, we've got Mark calling from Florence in Oregon. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But let's go to Mark. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I hope you're well this evening.
I'm doing just great, man. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks. I think people hold off on calling because they want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I want them to call in because I don't have anything prepared for this hour. I'll have something prepared tomorrow evening when we're doing open lines, but I was sort of hoping Chuck could stay the full hour, but initially he just said he could only stay 30 minutes, and knowing how busy he is and appreciating everything he's doing, I'm just glad we had him for 30 minutes. I thought he did a great job. What do you think?
I think so, too. I hope that he becomes president.
I would think it would be very interesting to have somebody who really believed in the Constitution and wanted to preserve America rather than the traitors we have who lead both political parties and the traitors we have running in both the Republican and the Democrat ticket. Anybody who's ever studied McCain's activities over there when he compromised and collaborated with the North Vietnamese, I do not think could have any respect for him at all. But go ahead, Mark. What did you want to say?
Well, Dr. Stan, your ad-libs are very interesting also. And like I say, I think that people are just very interested to hear, even off the top of your head, so to speak, what you have to say. And I don't think it's for the lack of an audience. I just feel that very strongly. You probably realize this also. But you were speaking in general terms just previous to my call, Dr. Stan, about things that are in the overall picture, which are controlling situations which will continue to evolve in, of course, a negative way, because it's really hard, if not impossible, to find a positive trend or even any light at the end of the tunnel, from my view, whether you're looking at the economy or the world economy or the U.S. economy in particular, about this country, all of the factors of life for a vibrant representative Republican democracy are very critical at this point. They're barely registering, if at all, on the scale of national health. And it looks like things are converging up to a point. And I've heard one gentleman say today that he felt, I believe it was Gerald Celente, I don't know if you had him on, but he's very good, and he felt that these problems were all going to basically be timed to reach an apex and manifest essentially into our personal lives as the American people in the same moment of time, so to speak, that they will all be brought together and happen basically coincidentally. And I heard today, Dr. Stan, you may have heard this, that I believe it's the largest bank in Holland, if not one of the largest. The president of that bank, chairman of the board, however you would term it, said that he thought in 3 weeks that the U.S. banking system was going to collapse with 6,000 bank failures in this country. And that is really radical talk, but at the same time, it came from such a high source, and it makes one wonder, is that just being leaked out, or is that an actual opinion? But either way, statements have a strange way when spoken at high levels of whether it be the economy or the government of the world, of coming true. But 3 weeks was such a short time frame. And one other thing to understand, the Russian foreign minister, I believe it was, the highest in the diplomatic corps, however you would term his position, in Russia, said today that if the U.S. goes through with the East European missile shield in Yugoslavia, and I think it's in Romania also, you may know better than I, but that they would retaliate with military, they termed it devices. And I just, you know, it just seems like things are picking up faster and faster, and you can look in 7 or 10 different directions on any given day, and there's something there that is fully capable and has the potential of reaching its own critical mass and affecting us all. And I don't think we can go really any further than the Bible with this, and I think we can see right where we're at, basically, as far as the prophetic time frame goes. And from my own view, I've just, more recently, but I've just given it all over to God as much as I am able to, because it's gone beyond my own strength to be able to cope with the world as I see it, and I try to see it as clearly as possible and to keep track of what's happening. And that's just a seeking after the truth, and it just happens to be that the truth is becoming more and more negative. And I just appreciate all the time you give me to talk, Dr. Stan. I almost feel like I'm at my own program.
Well, let's just comment on a few other things. Now, I've certainly seen this story about the 6,000 banks going down, and I don't know whether this is real. I do not think that it's. I mean, we have about 18,000 banks, and that would be a third of our banks. I think a lot of our banks are in trouble, but I don't think that they would allow 6,000 of our banks to go down. Remember, Mark, they are playing games with our minds. Mm-hmm. And this story has been all over at Sydney. I've got it from half a dozen different sources, and it's just going to happen in 3 weeks. What does that do? It frightens you to death. My goodness, and we're not ready for that sort of thing. The whole economy is going to shut down. No, I do not believe this is going to happen before the election. I think that this is all scare talk, and I think if it were really true, you would not be hearing about it through the internet or through regular channels. They would simply silence the story. So understand they're playing games with our minds. As far as the Russians are, you know, retaliating against the United States for what we're doing, understand that since the inception of communism, it has been funded through bankers and financiers and through the CIA, through the intelligence agencies, and more recently through the CIA. I personally talked to one of the leading members working. He was actually naval intelligence, but actually assigned to the CIA for many years. His name was Gunther Rosbacher. He told me about how Sydney, the CIA worked very, at certain levels, worked very closely with the KGB, and basically I talked to him as we were talking. I said, "Hey, that story sounds just like this story of the Brotherhood of the Rose." And he looked at me. Now, he's wearing a naval uniform. I think it had 2 stars on it. What would that be, a vice admiral or something of the sort? And, I don't know what his real rank was within the intelligence agencies, but it was very, very high. And he says, "That story, the Brotherhood of the Rose, is my story. The book is dedicated to me." Well, of course, I didn't know whether to believe anything he told me or not, but the next day I had a copy of The Brotherhood of Rose in my hands. It was available at the local bookstore, and sure enough, in the foreword, the book was dedicated to two or three people, but especially to Russ. So I believe that basically he was telling me the truth. The CIA and the KGB have always worked together. Nothing as it appears to be. We have kept Fidel Castro in power as the best enemy money could buy. They're trying to give us the specter of fear of communism, whereas, of course, the real enemy is not. Halfway around the world, the real enemy is right here, working at the highest levels of our government, in our great tax-exempt foundations, certainly in our great corporations, and our great banks, and, of course, they have created the best enemy money could buy. When you understand that, so much of what's going on really begins to make sense. Don't let them frighten you to death. We may be in for war. We may very well go to war with Russia and China, as we did with the Nazis. But remember, it was American corporations that built the war materials that were used to kill American boys. And they were building them even during the war for the Nazi war effort. General Motors, for International Telephone and Telegraph, AT&T, built the Stuka dive bomber that was used to dive bomb our troops. So the book, really, of course, is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, and Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. If you haven't read them, get them, Mark, but keep your eyes fixed on the Lord, because that's the important thing.
Well, I do, Dr. Stan. Like I said, it can be overwhelming with just one potentially lethal area, so to speak, on a national level, and we have more than one at this point. So I do rely on the Lord Jesus Christ and continue to, and I pray to rely on him only, and as I should, because there's really no other way to go.
We're out of time. Bye-bye.
Okay, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got somebody calling Spokane. Who's on the line?
Hi, it's Dee.
Okay, do you have a question or comment?
Well, the comment was, you said earlier that what's good for Detroit is good for America. In the 21st century, what's good for Big Pharma is good for America. And I just wanted your reaction to this abomination idea to put children on statin drugs. And could Bill Sardi come on and comment on that one the next week or so?
Well, Bill sent me an email on that this morning, but Bill's not doing a talk radio. I wish he was, because Bill's a wonderful source of information. But
indeed.
We're basically talking about a plan that's being suggested now, put forward by the American Academy of Orthopedics, of Pediatricians, AAP, the American Academy of Pediatricians, that we should put our children, starting perhaps at 8 years of age, onto statin drugs so they wouldn't get heart attacks when they were older. There's no scientific verification that would help, but it would sure be a great idea for the people who made the statin drugs, that is. Yeah, what they're doing to our children is terrible, whether it's putting them on statin drugs, whether it's the vaccination programs, whether they're having a profound impact on the metabolism of their brains, whether, of course, it's the psychotropic drugs that so many of our children are on, the Ritalin and the Prozac. It's criminal activity, but they really want to destroy our children. When you understand that, it really all begins to make sense. And, of course, people say, well, they're just doing this because they want to make a profit. I wish that were the case, but there really are evil and wicked people out there. And, of course, they relish the idea of destroying the lives of the children. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, just briefly, the insulin resistance observed in childhood and pediatrics could be avoided if they would get off the refined carbohydrates, the high-sugar diets, and they say, well, the fats are bad. Well, that's because they've been eating damaged fats, and if we'd eat good fats, then we wouldn't have the insulin problems that they would, and they wouldn't have to poison children's livers to try to fix the problem.
Well, I agree with you totally, but the idea of putting children onto statin drugs, statins work by poisoning the function of the liver. Why would you want to do that? Statin drugs are carcinogenic. Statin drugs suppress coenzyme Q10.
Yeah.
Statin drugs can alter the metabolism of the entire body, and then they lower the cholesterol levels, and by so doing, it affects the cerebration, because your brain is primarily made of fats, and you're going to alter the metabolism of a child, developing child's brain. Why would you want to do that unless you wanted to hurt the children? And I really believe this is what it's about. Hey, we're out of time. God bless.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
In. Get everybody up there in Spokane listening to Radio Liberty, will you?
Okay.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our open line program. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Chuck Baltimore. We'll be having Chuck on from time to time as we move towards November. And remember, of course, the media will not cover his campaign. Why? Because, of course, the media is controlled. We have a controlled media. We have freedom of the press. And freedom of the press means when you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to and take whatever biased position you want to. And I believe that's right. But I think the American people must understand you cannot trust what you hear on CBS, NBC, ABC, certainly on CNN or CBS. And certainly you can't believe what you read in most of the magazines, because they all are controlled by the same people. Most of the major publishing houses have been bought up, and yes, there are a few small independents out there that will put out books, but not that many. And then, of course, the major newspapers, 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in America are controlled by five mega corporations. And that, of course, is AOL, Time Warner, Bertelsmann, Viacom, Disney, and Fox. And when you understand that, while we begin to understand why you can go from channel to channel to channel, they're all talking about the same nonsensical things and all about the same sports things, because they do not want you to address the real issues. This is why they have their programs where people are shouting at one another there. And, of course, it is so that you get emotionally involved, but we're not talking about the real issues. It's really very simple. There is a small group of very wealthy and powerful people who control the world. And we describe them in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you have not read The Brotherhood of Darkness, why do you need to get it? You want to watch the story. It's up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can see my deliverance of The Brotherhood of Darkness there. Or I hope maybe you'd want to get the DVD and show it to others. And then my talk on The Forbidden Secret. Why is the forbidden secret important? Because it explains that there's a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. And, of course, in centuries past, it was worth your life to actually let anybody know that you even believed in the secret. But only recently is this being popularized by Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and by Jim Carrey and by Ellen DeGeneres. Rhonda Byrne's story of the secret. You can read all about it in a book. Sold millions of copies. I think about 5 to 7 million copies. And the DVD, very well done. And, of course, it tells you about the secret and how this has been suppressed for so many years and passed down from generation to generation. And what is the secret? Well, you can control your reality. You can control the world. There's a genie there, and you ask him, and he'll do whatever you want him to do. He'll give you whatever you want. You want money, you want love, you want success, you want fame. It's all there for you. But, of course, the ultimate end to the whole story is the fact that the realization that you are God. Now, I don't believe that at all. Because that is the lie that the serpent told Eve in the Garden of Eden. If you will eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you can be as God, and ye shall never die. And what this is really all about is a Luciferian religion. It is trying to contact the beings from the other dimension, and you can contact them, just as the mediums and the diviners and the fortune tellers and certainly all these people can contact the other dimension, at least those who are legitimate, true magicians, prophets have been able to, and certainly down through the ages, why world leaders have done this, and scientists, and certainly Thomas Edison was deeply involved in that. He was basically a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was a Satanist and worshipped Satan. And, of course, Thomas Edison would go into trances and then, of course, he would conjure up these ideas that gave us, of course, the phonograph and gave us the motion picture and gave us electric lights and so many of the wonderful things we think Thomas Edison actually developed. Thomas Edison was a theosophist, and the fact that no one wants to tell you that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And one of Thomas Edison's closest friends was a man named Henry Ford, who, of course, supported both the communists in Russia, built the plant in Gorky, and Adolf Hitler, helped Adolf Hitler as well. Ladies and gentlemen, our telephone number, 1-888-544-8927. Get the information. Help us disseminate the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you with the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Jim Gilchrist, who is with the Minuteman Group, and Jim's been on the front lines of being concerned about what was actually happening down on the border and about the just flood of illegal immigration that was being encouraged by the people from the Ford Foundation and, of course, the people from Lulac and Maldave and Mecha and all these radical racist organizations aimed at destruction of the sovereignty of our nation. Well, Jim, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Dr. Stan, thank you for inviting me on your program.
Well, tell us a little bit about, of course, what's going on down there at the border. What about the fence? Certainly last year, maybe it was a year or 2 years ago, I'm not sure, time flies so fast, but Congress passed legislation, I think, really to placate the American people and make them feel that the government was really going to do something about the problem of illegal immigration. And they passed legislation which mandated the building of 700 miles of fence, and they were supposed to have it done. When were they supposed to have that fence built?
Oh, last year sometime. Again, this is another example of our government, our political governors, giving us the illusion that things are taken care of, when in fact they're not. And like you said just a minute ago, that to appease the public, our political governors will throw us a bone and then ask us to go away and leave them alone, trying to convince us that everything is under control, quote-unquote, when we, in fact, know it's not.
No, it's fine. Well, do you have any idea how much of the fence has been built? Some people say 300 miles of the fence has been built. How much has really been built? Do we have any idea?
I doubt it's 300 miles. I've heard the same number, 370 miles. I've heard 40 miles. I've heard only 19 or 17 miles. I know along the San Diego border, in 1996, they put up about 20 miles of Israelite-style double-tiered fencing, which has been very, very effective, and that's thanks to Representative Duncan Hunter,
right,
from that district down in San Diego County, who is retiring this year, by the way, unfortunately. I would assume, from when I go to the border in the California areas, I don't see any fences at all. I keep going down Campo, Jacumba areas. That's about 60 miles east of San Diego, and there are no fences there. There is a little bit of work being done. There's some repairs to existing fencing, which does nothing really to stop the illegal intrusions. It might fend off two or three illegal aliens per day, but when you have almost 12,000 per day coming in over a 2,000-mile border, unapprehended, that's the unapprehended amount, it's essentially ineffective. We need a sheer wall or double two-tiered Israelite-style fence across the entire border from San Diego, California to Brownsville, Texas, despite the naysayers saying, oh, you can't do that. Well, yes, you can. I mean, that's the same naysayer who said we could not win World War II and we should just cut and run and let Europe and Asia just get chopped to shreds. The same people who said, you know, we shouldn't do this and do that. It's a negative attitude.
Hold that thought there, Jim. We'll be back in just a moment here with Jim Gilchrist at Radio Liberty. Okay, fine. Jim, are you on a regular hardline telephone? Almost sounds like on a cell phone.
I am. Can you hear me?
Are you on a regular hardline?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Okay, fine. So anyway, of course, I agree with you, with it, but you know, we need more than that. We need to take away the free medical benefits, for the free health care, the free education benefits, the availability certainly of welfare, and at least in some of our states. We know that in states like Arizona, where they passed legislation that made it very difficult for the illegal aliens, a lot of them have just picked up and moved to California, the land of milk and honey here, where we, of course, give them all the benefits, all the social benefits that anybody who's here is legally and the taxpayer is going to get. Why are we giving all these benefits and social welfare benefits and help to here, people who are here illegally and breaking our laws? That doesn't make any sense.
Dr. Stan, it's called pandering, and also it's called cowardice. Cowardice by the political governors that we Americans have voted into office, that we continue to vote into office, because we keep, instead of looking at the person's character or ability to represent us and engage in something that's largely unknown now, it's called representative government. In other words, governing for the people. We're being distracted by Broadway advertising tactics to re-elect people, a multi-million dollar campaign war chests that are used to buy advertising and public relations exposure to sell a candidate to the public, just like you sell a can of soup or a bunch of carrots. It's the same tactic that's used. And unfortunately, the Americans they do pick candidates the same way that they choose their toothpaste because of an ad that they saw on television. It's a constant reminder. They're very good at it, and that's why some of these people become lifelong politicians. Their concern is to be reelected, not to represent the electorate that puts them in the office. And they continue doing this on and on and on. And in the case of California, Texas, the border states in Chicago and areas like New York and other areas where there's an incredible incredible population of illegal aliens, predominantly from Mexico and Central America, you have groups like La Raza and, like you mentioned earlier, MALDEF, the Otzlan Reconquista group, which is equivalent to the Communist Party, in my opinion. They want to dominate, take over. They don't really care about a U.S. Constitution. Our founding fathers' vision...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim Gilchrist. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jim is simply talking about these radical groups, La Raza, Maldev, and other groups that, really, of course, want to really just take over our country. They're political groups that are using the illegal immigrant movement, and then, of course, are then trying to get the people who are here illegally of Spanish extraction to go along with them with this idea of racism. The La Raza is a racist organization. La Raza means race. It's being funded by the Ford Foundation. Why would the Ford Foundation fund a racist organization? Because, of course, Henry Ford was deeply involved with theosophy. The Ford Foundation, it did not become a radical because it was taken over by the radicals. It was created to be a radical organization, and it's certainly done that. It's funded the communists, it's funded the socialists, it's funded the humanists, it's funded everybody who hates America. It's funding La Raza and Maldev and these other organizations that are intent upon destroying the sovereignty of our nation. So pick up the story there, Jim.
I have to agree with you on your definition of La Raza. First of all, La Raza is Latin or Mexican for the race. That's what La Raza means, the race. Its mantra is for the race, in other words, the Mexican race, everything. For those outside the race, nothing. You could not get more racially supreme or be more racial supremacist than that mantra. That's right up there, in my opinion, with the Black Panthers, the KKK, the Jewish Defense League, the American Indian Movement, all these violent, hostile groups who base all their judgment and decisions on a person's color, race, or creed, one or the other or all of the above, and certainly all of them, all of these organizations are acutely opposed to the vision of our founding fathers, which eliminates any judgment based on race, color, and creed. And that's what La Raza does. It is so large. It's the largest organized racial supremacy group in the United States today, and it dwarfs the combined membership and participation of the KKK, the Nazis, the American Indian Movement, the Black Panthers, the Asian gangs, all of the other races combined, all their racist groups, are probably equivalent to only about 10% of the size of La Raza. So it is really the leading racial supremacy group in the United States today, and it has to be dealt with and looked at just like that. The reason it's so hard to get our political governors to take them on is because that they are so big and they are so powerful. With $10 million a year starting next year will be going to La Raza from U.S. Congress. They've allocated it $5 million this year, $10 million next year, and apparently $10 to $15 million every year thereafter. That's my money and your audience's money that they're giving away arbitrarily to a known racist group. It is outrageous. And one of my missions is to bring national awareness to this issue, that we are a country that is literally funding a racial supremacy group to orchestrate the demise of our English language, our Judeo-Christian culture, our culture from back in the 16, 1700s when we first started populating New England, and all of that to La Raza means nothing. And it's that blunt. It really means nothing. People dying in World War II means nothing. The Civil War means nothing. The Revolutionary War, it means nothing to La Raza. And how it is so bewildering that we have so many literal cowards and weak-kneed people who represent us in Congress, because they don't want to face up to La Raza. They will default to giving La Raza whatever La Raza wants, because the people opposed to La Raza are not getting up and yelling and screaming in numbers large enough to get the attention of Congress, predominantly the United States Senate. We are making headway. The Minuteman Project is making headway with universities. I just got published in Georgetown University Law School Journal 2 weeks ago, a 5,000-word essay on this issue. I'm one of the few non-lawyers to be published in that journal. They wanted the opinion, the perspective of a non-attorney about the immigration issue. I'm getting speaking engagements, San Diego University, another one in Arkansas, and I'll be on a 10-day tour in New England for the last week of September. So we are making headway, but it's still too slow. We will not have this problem resolved before either McCain or Obama, both of them pro-illegal alien invasion fanatics, both of them. One of them is going to be our president.
And not a very good choice, is it?
No, there isn't. My favorite right now is Chuck Baldwin, and I'm a registered Republican. But if I was a cultist Republican, then I would support McCain. I am not a cultist Republican. I am an open-minded person who feels that the rule of law applies universally to every man, woman, and child in this country. Freedom of speech and all the civil rights under our Constitution apply to everyone who is in U.S. territory, regardless of whether they're here legally or not. However, that doesn't mean that they're allowed to stay here if they're here illegally. What it means is that an illegal alien, in my opinion, is entitled to freedom of speech and all the other protections under the Constitution, except they are not allowed to be here. And when they are discovered, they are to be deported back to their homelands, and they are to be educated in their homelands to do in their country of origin exactly what the Minuteman Project is doing in the United States of America. You assemble, you get as many people as possible, you assemble peacefully, you speak peacefully, you bring your grievance forth, and force public debate on a critical issue. In our case, it's an overwhelming illegal alien invasion that's morphing our culture and jeopardizing the future of the United States of America and our stature as a nation governed under the rule of law. We can all agree, Dr. Stan, a nation that no longer has respect for its rules of law is no longer a civilized nation. It's a nation of mob rule and anarchy. In other words, it's a nation where the rule of law is dictated by the meanest thugs wielding the biggest clubs. And that's exactly why our founding fathers attempted to set up safeguards to prevent that from happening. Well, those safeguards are failing because the people who were supposed to preserve those safeguards have failed us. People we have elected, you and I and your listeners, we have put into office trusting them. Well, they've breached that trust.
Well, I certainly share your concern, Jim. Tell us, what are the Minutemen doing now? How effective are they being? Are you still have groups down there on the border?
Yes, we've got, it's a multi-pronged approach, Dr. Stan. 5% of the effort is going to the border with a lawn chair and binoculars and aiding Border Patrol in reporting, observing and reporting illegal entries. The other 95% is away from the border. It's writing books. I've done that with Dr. Jerome Corsi, a renowned author. Going on radio programs like this and television and newspaper interviews, participating in university research projects. I just did two of those in the last 2 weeks for French news media and French university. Their correspondents came over here to interview me to get information about what we're doing with illegal immigration and how we created this thing called the Minuteman Project, because they are having a similar problem that may very well be worse than the problem we're having, and they're starting to worry about it. And it's all a matter of bringing national awareness to the issue despite your country of origin. Just because you're in France doesn't mean you can't have a First Amendment. You do the same thing we're doing in the United States, but you do it in France, and you'd be surprised at the results eventually. Eventually, hopefully, within 10 years, you can have things restored back to order. The 35 million illegal aliens currently occupying U.S. territory, that's a huge number. Yes, I said 35 million. The government says it's only 12 million. Well, the government is lying. The government is lying to us. The better minds and better experts on this issue 3 years ago said there were over 20 million, and at the rate of over 5 million per year just penetrating our southern border alone every year unapprehended, that's another 15 million. We're up to 35, maybe as high as close to 40 million now. There is not one community in the United States where there is not a foreign enclave. In other words, where the U.S. flag is not flown, it's not respected, it's not wanted, English is not spoken, it's not respected, it's not wanted to be learned, and American culture and American history and American patriotism is neither wanted nor respected.
Well, of course, these people have a loyalty to Mexico. They're Mexicans. They love their country. And, of course, why should they want to adopt our principles? They believe we have stolen their land and they want it back again.
And that's balderdash. That's what they've been indoctrinated with for over 150 years since we won the war of the American-Mexican War back in from 1846 to 1848. And part of the Southwest territories, the 7 or 8 states in the Southwest that they claim has always been theirs, about half of that was reparations for war, a war that Mexico started with our border patrols, our U.S. cavalry and settlers along the Rio Grande back in 1836. We won that war decisively. We took half the territory that Mexico had claimed they had privy to as the reparations for the war. We also gave $18 million to Mexico for repairs that of damages that our Army and Marine Corps units did when they invaded Mexico. We were offered Baja California, that's everything south of San Diego, for $10 million by their corrupt president. Our president, who had at least some semblance of character, his name was Polk, turned down that offer. He said we had enough land.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim Gilchrist, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. All right, Jim, go right ahead with the story.
And the rest of the Southwest was acquired in 1854, thereabouts, by President Polk again in what was called the Gadsden Purchase. And that includes Arizona and parts of California and I think Nevada and maybe parts of New Mexico and Utah. And that is how the West was won back in the mid-1800s. We have every right to this territory as a sovereign U.S. territory. Mexico can teach its children till the cows come home, that we stole it from them, that the U.S. government owes them about one-third of U.S. territory. That's, they will, if they want it, they're going to have to try to come and take it. However, they are clever in that there are two ways to seize the infrastructure of a nation, either by sending in armed troops with bayonets fixed and their rifles blazing, and you physically seize it by destroying everything in front of you until your target of your invasion surrenders, or you can do it covertly in a Trojan horse manner by transferring your population. Let's use Mexico for an example, since it's the most prominent violator of our immigration laws. You transfer as much of the population of Mexico and Central America into the United States by any means necessary, and regardless of any laws that you're breaking, and you, by sheer numbers, you systematically will seize that country. That's what's happened to California, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. Next in line are the states bordering those states. Oklahoma has had a problem. Not Augusta, Georgia, but the entire state of Georgia. The most popular states now for illegal aliens to target are the Carolinas, North and South Carolina, especially North Carolina. That apparently seems to be where there are still enough Americans to be put out of work if you will bid half the prevailing wage to do their work. Then you've got a lot of them moving to Chicago, Anchorage, Alaska, working on the boats, the fishing boats, because, again, instead of working for $50 or $80 an hour on a fishing boat, which is a very, very dangerous job, you work for $20 an hour with no benefits, and the employer loves it. The employer laughs all the way to the bank, while the unemployed former middle-class tax-paying American and his family cry all the way to the poorhouse. But incrementally, you seize the country. You will have, by the year, at the current rate of invasion, Dr. Stan, by the year 2025, there will be more illegal aliens occupying U.S. territory than there will be citizen voters. In other words, those Americans who are old enough or qualified to vote, there will be more illegal aliens. That power of 120 to maybe, as many, some experts estimate, 205 million illegal aliens, and a total population of a little over 550 million, 40% of our population will be illegal, and we will have a, we need Congress that will literally cower to the threat of street insurrection by 120, 200 million illegal aliens who are demanding amnesty now and instant dual citizenship. Our Congress, with a magic wand, will grant them everything they want, despite, without any conference whatsoever with the American public. They'll just do it.
But of course, Jim, this could never have happened had it not been that the people at the highest levels of our government and the people in the Ford Foundation wanted it.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Jim Gilchrist. He's talking about, of course, by the year 2025, we'll have another, we'll have 100, 150, maybe even 200 million illegal immigrants here who have, of course, threatened to overthrow our government if we don't give them citizenship. Similar things are happening in France today, where about 8% of the population is now Muslim, and they're, of course, they're increasing. They don't even have to come into the country. They just simply will have 5-6 kids per family, and the French will have no children. Children of one child per family, and you give them another generation or so, and of course they will be the majority in France. And the same thing is happening here, but it wouldn't, as I pointed out to Jim, we would not have the problem with illegal immigration if George Bush and Bill Clinton and the first George Bush, and yes, even Ronald Reagan, who promised the American people in 1986 that if we would simply give him amnesty, and we did. He said, there's only 1 million illegal aliens here. We'll give them amnesty, and it'll never happen again because we're going to enforce the border. We're going after employers that are hiring illegally. We are going to set up a Becerra program for farm laborers. And Ronald Reagan, as with so many things, said the right things, and they lied to the American people. And as a result, the 1986 legislation was passed. There was 1 million illegals. There were 3 million illegals who all suddenly became legal, and now they want to do it again. And, of course, when are the American people going to understand that our leaders have a different agenda, they have a different worldview, and whether we think they're conservative or liberal, Republicans or Democrats, really doesn't matter. They all seem to have this idea of going along with this globalist view of destroying sovereignty and creating a world government. Did you get that impression from Dr. Corsi when you wrote your book with him on the Minutemen and securing our borders?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, Dr. Jerome Corsi called me one evening during the writing process of the book and told me he had stumbled over something over the Internet that he was going to investigate further on. I was skeptical, but he did investigate and came out with a lot of writing on his Internet blog regarding the Security and Prosperity Partnership called the SPP, which is a precursor to the North American Union. And that essentially was a meeting with President of Mexico, President of Canada, and President Bush in March, early March of 2005 that set the an agreement among the three countries that they would merge economically and they would have transnational freeways without stop going literally from southern Mexico all the way up through northeastern Maine, northeastern Canada, and then east and west through the United States with a Mexican customs office 3 square miles large in Kansas City, Missouri, about 1,200 miles into the United States. I have to ask you, what good is a customs office or a checkpoint 1,200 miles into U.S. territory? Should it be at Laredo, Texas, or El Paso, Texas?
Well, you see, Jim, I'm sure, as you well know, they want to do away with the borders. They want to do away with our sovereignty. They want to merge our country with Mexico and Canada and raise the living standard to the average American to that of the Mexican peasant, or maybe vice versa.
Right. And essentially, we would become a mirror. We will become a mirror reflection of a third world country, just like Mexico. 95% of our population will be lower class, fighting over 5% of remaining wealth. Meanwhile, the upper 5%, upper class, will control 95% of the wealth. And it sounds like too weird to be true, but it is true. This is what's happened to third world countries over history. Even though they were democracies at one time, the same thing will happen to us when we neglect the vigilance that our founding fathers set in place so that something like this could not happen. And I'd like to add that when you have 120 to 205 million illegal aliens here demanding citizenship and amnesty immediately, when they get the citizenship, they will also get voting rights, which means they will also have dual voting rights, the right to vote in the United States and the right to vote in their homeland, despite any promise that they've made not to vote in their homeland. And this is what will happen. By the year 2030, our mayors, our state governors, our federal and state representatives and senators in Washington will be comprised of former illegal aliens, some of whom just came across the border the day before to get amnesty today and then be elected in a city council position tomorrow, etc. And this will happen through every level of government, from dog catcher all the way up to the U.S. Senate and almost the president. Mm-hmm. There will be cabinet members. And what this will allow is, for the first time in the year 2030, my prediction is that we will have the first attempt to introduce legislation in Congress trumping English as the common language with Spanish.
Hey, look. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jim Gilchrist, and Chris Jim is talking about how they would like to make Spanish the official language here in the United States, and people really don't understand. They don't understand that we call AT&T, for instance, and they say, do you want your message in English or in Spanish? And then, of course, you'd call so many of the other companies, American Airlines, do you want your information in American or in Spanish? Why? Because they do not want America to have one language, because if they had one language, you have a united people. You have dual languages, you have a divided people. And, of course, people do not understand. Back in 1988, Senator Hayakawa introduced legislation to make English the official language of the United States. Hayakawa was a Japanese, but he was an American first. He was Japanese second. At that time, he couldn't understand why there was so much opposition to having English the official language of the United States. And I'm afraid Senator Hayakawa and so many of the people in Washington, D.C. really don't understand that they're people who have a different vision, who have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is this internationalist dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion. But, of course, they're doing everything they can to actually have a multicultural, multilingual society, play one group against the other. And this could not be taking place without the help of the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation and the members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the people of great wealth who rule our nation, who have a different dream. They dream of a country where no longer will it be the United States. It will be part of this new North American Union and then eventually part of this new world government, this new international order. Jim, go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, the first attempt to introduce Spanish as the common language of the land will fail in 2030, but it'll be reintroduced again and again. And probably within a decade, it will pass. Or we will be a bifurcated language country, just like Canada, where they have English and French. We will be English and Spanish. It'll be very disruptive. India has 26 languages, according to an Indian immigrant friend of mine. 26 languages, and he says it is literal chaos trying to get anything done. There's no common bond for communication or commerce. You need 26 interpreters and 26 different lawyers with different languages to engage commerce from one part of the country to another.
Well, that thought will be right back with Jim Gilchrist. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jim Gilchrist from the Minuteman. Before we go on, Jim, would you like to get at your website? I might incidentally mention we do carry your book, The Minuteman, which you wrote along with Dr. Jim Corsi and subtitled Securing the United States Borders. But would you like to get your website up there and information on how people get in touch with you and your organization?
Sure. Visit us at MinutemanProject.com. That's MinutemanProject.com. I also have my own personal website called JimGilchrist.com, but the primary website is MinutemanProject.com. Come and join us, get on our email list, send us emails if you have any questions.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, Chris, go right ahead with your discussion. Of course, you share, and I share your concern, the fact that there is a move away from English as the official language of this country, first of all, to be a bilingual country, and then eventually the language will become Spanish. People say that could never happen in America. Of course it can happen if the American people aren't concerned or do not really care enough to try to get the truth out. The fact that there are people at the highest levels of our government, some of the richest people in this country, hate America, hate our sovereignty, and one only has to read the memoirs of David Rockefeller, which we do carry, the book called Memoirs by David Rockefeller. On page 405, he said, you know, I and my family have been accused of being part of a cabal that is conspiring against the United States and is working to bring about a new international order. And, of course, if that is the charge, I plead guilty. So go right ahead, Jim.
Yes, we have another issue, too, and that is a culture, our neighboring culture, Mexico, is undergoing a serious internal war with the drug cartels. The government the people there themselves, that carnage is already spilling over into the United States. We are the largest user of illegal drugs imported from Mexico than any other country in the world. In my opinion, the amount of money transferred into Mexico from the United States in exchange for methamphetamine, opium, heroin, cocaine, and marijuana, and any other contraband, well, the aggregate amount of money for all those illicit drugs in the course of a year exceeds the combined top three sources of revenue to Mexico, and that would be oil exports, tourist income, and thirdly, remittances from illegal aliens currently in the United States who send a lot of their money back to Mexico. Those three combined, I believe, are about $130 billion a year. The drug trade is a little bit higher than that, from what I'm getting from law enforcement estimates. And not all of that is really trackable. Those are just estimates based on what's discovered. Maybe only 10%, 20% of the drugs at most are apprehended at the border. The other 80 to 90% get through. But they apprehend several $1 billion a year of drugs. The other $100 billion or $150 billion of market value of drugs get through, and that money ends up going back south. There's almost 500 members of law enforcement killed in the last 18 months in Mexico fighting just the drug cartels. Another 4,500 or so people killed, murdered, shot to death in either drug participants or people caught, innocent people caught in a crossfire during a drug shootout.
They've actually been targeting the police, the chiefs, and the police commissioners.
31 police chiefs have been murdered in the last, I think, 3 years, about one per month. 11 newspaper reporters and Mexican newspaper reporters and television reporters have been murdered who have been investigating criminal cartels in Mexico. The equivalent of our Homeland Security, DHS, Chief Michael Chertoff, well, his equivalent in Mexico was murdered 2 months ago, shot 8 times as he left his home to go to work in Mexico City. He worked directly, answered directly to the president of Mexico, shot and killed by a drug cartel. The murderers were never apprehended.
Down there, in many respects, the drug cartel is even stronger than the police force and the military. Let's go to Joe, though, who's calling from Michigan, who has a question for you. Hi, Joe. Do you have a question for our guest?
A comment and then a question. I wanted to ask your guest. Well, I wanted to say first, I firmly believe that we will never get our country back through talking, through the law, through the political landscape. I firmly believe that just as we got our country through the blood and guts of our ancestors, is the same way that we're going to get our country back now through our own blood and guts. And I would like to ask your caller, do you believe that we will truly, in your heart of hearts, do you believe we'll get our country back through talking, through creating laws, and through this political landscape that's controlled by Satan's servants? I mean, we literally are. I'd like to hear your comments.
Thank you, Joe. Good question. I understand what you're saying, and what the consequence is that if we cannot bring this country back under the rule of law and government and governance by the people in a peaceful manner, we will default to a violent revolution. I think that a violent revolution will not happen, and if it does, it will be on a very small scale, and this is why, Joe. Let's say, you always hear about the people saying, well, don't pay your taxes, and if we all don't pay our taxes, the government will have to change the tax code. You know, we can rebel by not paying our taxes. So everybody in the community holds back on their taxes. Well, the IRS agents come out and they arrest one person. They take his home, his cars, his bank accounts, put him in jail, his wife leaves him, and his kids have no use for him anymore because they're out in the street. Well, the neighbors see that. They immediately file their tax returns. In other words, the same thing will happen with a revolution. you'll have, remember the Freeman? I believe they were in Montana. They were holding off law enforcement for about 2 months. Oh, 10, 12, 20 years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting a lot of rah-rah and cheering from American public. Yeah, go and, you know, fight the system, fight the system. But those same people who were cheering would not do what they did. As a result, what happens in a revolution is that law enforcement is dispatched. They put down the neighborhood riot or the neighborhood insurrection, and the other neighborhoods don't dare engage in that because they don't want to go to jail or lose their property or be fined and lose their bank accounts and their jobs, etc. And in 1861, when we had our first and only Civil War so far, there was no such thing as Social Security. There was no retirement plan from your employer. There, people didn't own homes. Very few did. They had nothing to do but, hey, might as well go and fight for our country. In that case, it was the Southern country and the Northern country. I see the same problem here with trying to recruit people to engage in warfare against their government despite all their anger and their feeling of betrayal by the government. Trying to put it together and pulling it off right now in the 21st century, I would say, is impossible. So I defaulted, not that I don't think it would ever happen, I just don't think it's very likely. I've deliberately defaulted to a peaceful resolution, assemble and speak under the First Amendment, bring our grievance forward to the public square, demand and demand and demand the debate be brought forward on this illegal immigration issue, and try to replace every political office holder possible who has had anything whatsoever to do with this invasion, and derelict and neglectful cavalier attitude towards the rule of law. It's longer. It takes a lot more determination. It's not as easy as, like in Vietnam, in the war there, lock, load, pull trigger, problem solved. Well, you can't do that here. Here, you assemble, you speak, you assemble, you speak, you write books, you get on talk radio and television, you assemble, you speak, you go to the border, bring media frenzy to whatever you do, keep forcing the debate in this issue, and one by one, you replace every political representative who has had anything to do with this derelict neglect of our nation's stature as a nation governed under the rule of law. And again, it's not easy, but I think it's the only way we're going to get it done. I really don't think the public has the stamina to engage in a civil war or the courage. They've got too much to lose.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people in this country that are like hunters and,
yes.
You know,
but, Joe, the thing is that they're not going, of course, to actually, they can talk all they want to about it, but I don't think there's enough people with moral courage to do it. The solution to the problem is that when the vast majority of the American people understand what's really going on, and, of course, understand the spiritual forces that are behind what's going on, this is a spiritual battle. This is not an ideological battle or a political battle or a philosophical battle. This is a spiritual battle. And until people recognize that, and without God's help, we would never be able to take our country back. I believe God was involved in the American Revolution on our side. If there was a revolution today, whose side do you think God would be on? I think he'd be sitting up in the bleachers, and of course, want to see our country destroyed. Unless we are righteous people, we don't deserve freedom. Anything else, Joe?
That's it. Thanks a lot.
God bless.
Thank
you. Telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think that what, of course, Jim said is absolutely true. Everybody wants to talk about it, but all they would have to see is somebody, of course, be arrested, and they take their home and everything they have and throw them in prison, and everybody else would knuckle under because we've lost our sense of moral outrage. And when the things that are going on, and when we understand, of course, that the anti-war movement is controlled by exactly the same people who are pushing the war movement, when so many of the organizations in this country, the militia movement, for instance, I should say the Minuteman movement a few years ago, this was organized by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Why? Because they wanted to know who the people were. They funded the whole thing. And, of course, people thought it was their movement. It was never their movement. And the same thing was true of the communist movement in this country. The mafia is thoroughly infiltrated with government infiltrators. The Aryan Nation was thoroughly infiltrated with government infiltrators. And until people understand that they want the armed opposition out there, they want to know who the people are who may be troublemakers so they can be among those first picked up and put into concentration camps. Ladies and gentlemen, we're involved in the spiritual battle. Our job is to educate the public and let them understand not only the philosophical forces, but the spiritual forces that are behind this movement towards the New World Order, the New World Religion with the destruction of Christianity, and the enthronement of a New World Leader. Otherwise, efforts at armed resistance are simply exercise in futility. You're absolutely right, Jim.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. And you're right. It is a contest between good and evil. God and Satan, essentially.
And that's what
that contest. It's always been that contest. And, you know, something I learned when I was in screenwriting school, which is one of my other things that I studied outside of journalism and being a CPA, was that they used God and they used Satan in the plots all the time, one way or the other. And it was always a play or a screenplay or a book or a novel about good versus evil. And eventually good would overwhelm evil. But it was a very long road and a very tedious climb up that hill to conquer the evil. Aaron Burr put it very succinctly, evil succeeds where good people do nothing. And this is our call, our clarion call now, to come forth peacefully, respectfully, under the First Amendment, something vested in us by our founding fathers. It's an irrevocable right, meaning no one but either a tyrant or God can take freedom of speech away from you. And as far as, or the First Amendment, as far as I know, no one in Congress can rightfully claim that they're God. So if that freedom of speech or that First Amendment or our civil rights have been taken from us, it's not been by God, it's been by tyranny in our highest levels of government. But we can win this battle. It's just going to take a while, and we can do it bloodlessly. There will be a lot of yelling, a lot of finger-pointing and name-calling and screaming and so on and so forth and cussing and swearing, but there will be little to no blood, and we will pull off this social revolution and bring this country back under what I feel is a responsible, civilized society governed by the people under the rule of law. It's just a matter of time in Stoicism.
Well, there's a wonderful book. It was written probably 50 years ago by one of my favorite authors. It's called The Devil's Advocate. That's The Devil's Advocate. And for Joe or anybody else out there listening who wonders how we're going to take America back, I think it's an excellent book. You can probably get a used copy of it on Amazon, The Devil's Advocate by Taylor Caldwell, a gripping story of a situation very similar to what we have today and what was done to regain freedom. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I agree with Jim that we have a very real problem. We are being invaded, but of course the invasion would never take place if it were not for the treasonous actions of the people at the highest levels of our government, those globalists who have no loyalty to America. And unfortunately, we have two political candidates running for the presidency in November, one a Republican, one a Democrat, who are both globalists, who may talk, I think McCain talks about sealing our borders, but look at his voting record, ladies and gentlemen. He's actually been advocating openly amnesty for illegal aliens. I mean, this is unbelievable, but of course now when he's running for president, he's going to be putting on a firm face. Oh my goodness, we're going to seal our borders. They have no intention of sealing their borders. It's all window dressing. It's symbolism over substance. It's rhetoric over reality. But we can't ever let the American people know that our loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist vision. Jim, you got a couple of minutes to sort of wrap things up? Go right ahead.
Yes. And like you were saying, that what our political frontrunners are giving us is the typical lip service. We will have exactly no change. regardless of McCain or Obama assuming the White House. I think if Obama gets in, we're going to have just outright open borders and merging with every country in the world. It could be that reckless. With McCain, we'll have the North American Union. McCain is meeting with La Raza. McCain and Obama are coming to San Diego Friday. I believe it's July 11th, this Friday. And they're going to be presenting to the National Council of La Raza. And that, to me, is no different than a political candidate pandering to the KKK or the Black Panthers or the Jewish Defense League or the Asian gangs or any other racial supremacist organization. And I mean it when I say La Raza is the largest racial supremacy group organized in the United States today. It's a shame, but the facts are the facts. And when your mantra is for the Mexican race, everything, for those outside the Mexican race, nothing, you cannot be defined as anything but a racist organization. And it's time I spread the word. And thank you for Talk Radio to allow me to have free speech and fulfilling the vision of our founding father.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim Gilchrist. Jim, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
3 minutes.
Right.
Yes, well.
And you've done very well. It's been a real pleasure. Because I always enjoy having you on. When I heard you were actually going to be doing the talk show circuit again, I said, I want Jim Gilchrist. He's one of my favorite guests. So please go right ahead. You got about 3 minutes.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. We are a society at risk. Case in point. When 1.5 million illegal aliens swarm into our city streets, Los Angeles, Phoenix, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Miami, wherever, Milwaukee is another city, San Francisco, and parade with the Mexican flag, which is what happened about 2 years ago. That is not anything but a declaration of domination or a declaration of dominion over the United States of America, and it's an outright and absolute insult to our laws and to every citizen of this country and every legal resident and every legal immigrant who is waiting to become ordained with citizenship. And there comes a time, ladies and gentlemen, where you must make a stand. You take that stand, and my concluding words to you are a paraphrase from Captain John Parker, who stood with the 77 original Minutemen at Lexington Green, facing off with against 1,200 heavily armed British troops that were advancing on them. 8 of those Minutemen were killed. Several dozen were wounded in the subsequent battle. But just before the first shot was fired, he looked down that line of 77 Minutemen, and he said, Minutemen, stand your ground. If it's a war they want, then let it begin here. But I'm going to paraphrase that in my own words. Minutemen and women, stand your ground. By an irrevocable right vested in us by our founding fathers, we all have a right to peacefully assemble and bring forth our grievance. And if it's a war our U.S. political governors want, then we will fight them. And we will fight them with the First Amendment, and we will fight them within the rule of law, and we will not quit because we are going to win this contest. Thank you.
God bless, and thanks very much for being with us. Our guest has been Jim Gilchrist. Good night. God bless, Jim.
Good night, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you've enjoyed our program with Jim Gilchrist. And we, of course, we have a DVD on the conquest of Aztlan. It's put forward by our good friend Glenn Spencer. It goes into the background of this whole idea of the Ford Foundation, the Henry Ford Foundation, Actually, and you remember that next time you're going to buy a car, because what happened was they took the Ford Motor stock and they put it into the foundation so that the Ford family could continue to control the automotive industry, the automotive country. So basically, this was created by Henry Ford. This is his foundation because he was a theosophist. He was dedicated to this whole internationalist scheme of the Luciferians. Yes, Henry Ford, the emblem of American competitiveness, was basically deeply involved with the occult. And the average American doesn't understand that, or the fact that his closest friend, Thomas Edison, of course, was a member of the Theosophical Society. Henry Ford was into spiritualism, and that, of course, explains so much of what's going on today. And the Ford Foundation has been funding this illegal immigrant movement, was instrumental in creating La Raza, a racist organization. Why? With the intent of destroying America. Why do you think Henry Ford built the motor plant at Gorky in Russia? Why, of course, to build up communism? Why do you think, of course, he worked so closely with the Nazis prior to the Second World War? Because, of course, it was all in preparation for the coming Second World War, which was going to bring about the world government that all of these internationalists want. And that's, of course, what's behind this desire to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, to bring about this one world government. Well, a lot of these things, not everything I've talked about, but much of this is covered in the DVD, The Conquest of Aztlan, which we recommend to you, which we carry. Glenn Spencer puts it out. We have an excellent four-tape set on immigration. We have a book, The Minutemen, to guard the United States boundaries by Jim Kilgrist, who is just our guest. We have another book on immigration, The Immigration Invasion. All of these items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. To understand the Ford Foundation, let me suggest a book which we have kept in print going back, of course, to the early 1990s. The book is Foundations, Their Power and Influence. The book was actively suppressed back in 1958 when it was published. It was actually put out by Devin Adair Publisher, written by Rennie Wormser, who was the counsel for the only congressional committee ever allowed to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations. And here, of course, you'll learn a great deal about the Ford Foundation and its funding of the communist movement and the revolutionary movement and the intense hatred these people have for the sovereignty of America. And you carry that forward to what's going on today, you can understand what's going on today. The book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, is one of the most important books you will ever read. And when our supply is gone, they're gone forever, because it will probably never be reprinted. Under any circumstances, we got permission from the man who'd been printing it for many years, and we've kept it in print. We think it's so vitally important. Foundations, Their Power and Influence, one of the five most important books in my library. And, of course, we do hope you'll want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the talk on DVD, you can get the talk on CD or tape, or you can get the book that gives you the documentation by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or if you prefer, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war. America is under attack today. And then, of course, we hope you want to get our talk on the forbidden secret and the syllabus that goes with that. There is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. We hope you want to get the DVDs. The secret mystery of America's beginning, because I play a small part in the book, in the DVD, but the story is very important. And then, of course, the DVD, the Riddles in Stone, the secret architecture of our nation's capital. Understand, we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Tuesday, the 8th of July, 2008. Yeah, more news. That's right, more news, more reasons. Of course, they don't give you the type of news in the mainstream networks that you get here. They don't want you to even consider that there is...